bureaucracies and improve them themselves.
Rulers must stop taking their own people through the motions. They should deliver democracy, because democracy probably is really one of the prerequisites for bringing about social, economic, political, cultural justice for all.
The moment we have a situation where the political leaders choose the referee, I always refer to this word referee because of my love for football. Mm-hmm. The moment the referee...
Not only, by the way, do those individuals choose the referee only. Okay. They also go on and choose the linesmen. In fact, to a certain extent, they even choose the spectators. And the only thing they probably don't do, really, is to stop somebody to access oxygen.
Absolutely. So the moment we have that situation continuing in very many African countries, it is going to become a very tense moment for the development that we urge for. Because many times these selected leaders who have the referee by themselves, who have the linesmen, the lack, and they go on further and even deactivate civil society works. They turn out, they start taking on very vigorous and violent actions against the media and journalists. So if that doesn't stop, it is going to continue in such a way that all the time the leaders will never deliver that democracy, because many times our president has once said, Mr. Museveni, that for him, he's working for his grandchildren and his children, which means the will of the people that put him in that office. And he further said he's not a servant of anybody. So in such a state where someone is not a servant of anybody, who is also working for his children and his grandchildren, what do you expect from such a leader? What is he going to deliver? Will he really deliver democracy, or will he simply deliver what is favorable for his children, his grandchildren, and less for the people that purportedly put him into power? Remember, people vote. Apparently, they go to the voting station. Some will be intimidated. Others will not turn up. The referee is on his side. So, and then he tops that up by saying he's a revolutionary leader and Africa still needs him. He has a lot of work to do. So, I want to remind you, Dr. Shaka, that this is a gentleman who said Africa's problem is leaders who overstay in power.
Well, he has since amended that he actually meant leaders who stay longer in power without being elected by their people.
Ah, amazing amendment.
Yeah. But staying with Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni, you said that he has actually said he is driven by working for his children and his grandchildren. Did he in fact say that, or was he in fact misquoted in fairness to him?
If you come out on an interview on TV and you say something like that, and you mention how you're working for that group of people, a select group of people, in all fairness, whether misquoted or not, it is, for me, in my opinion, it's unfair for a president to categorically enslave himself and narrow the margin of his expected output specifically to a certain group of people. My opinion would still not be different that he actually meant what he said, all fairness.
I see. Well, there doesn't seem to be a shortage of people, call them leaders or rulers, who apparently seem to have a sense of ownership, a sense of entitlement, as a matter of fact. because they say they and their colleagues woke up very early in the morning, went to the bush with the AK-47s, seized power, and they say that the fact that they were doing that precisely because they were liberating you. And because they say they were liberating you, not necessarily liberating themselves, they are entitled to calling shots in their countries.
I make reference to General Muntu. One time, one of the conversations we had with him, General Mugisha Muntu was formerly the commander of the Uganda People's Defense Forces. And in the UPDF Act, he exists among the mentioned, he's part of the council. You know, they have gone forward to also indicate who of these soldiers, the 23 that liberated
the 27,
the
number 27, the 27, yes.
The 27 that liberated the country, and they appear in a legislation to effect that they are the ones. They keep reminding us, and we are reminded, of course. So General Mugisha Muntu said that as they were getting done or towards the end of the war, some of the issues that he raised is, are we really still up to the task of liberating the people, or are we now to a new task of enriching ourselves? That during that time, he had observed some of his comrades had started earmarking certain properties that they would take over shortly after they had won the war. So it answers the question of entitlement, that the moment they felt the war was coming to the end, they started thinking of how they should reward themselves for the war of liberation. Now, the question is, were they liberating us, or they went into this art or the topic of liberation purposely for financial gain and to help themselves? Probably of all they had been deprived of, that was the time for them to enrich themselves.
Very interesting. Professor, let's look for some practical solutions here. Africa sincerely needs democracy, and democracy needs Africa. You know, on March 6, 1957, there was a gentleman called Dr. Kwame Nkrumah. He regained his country's political independence from the British. That country was called the Gold Coast. He renamed it the Republic of Ghana. And in his address to the people of Ghana, he challenged them. He said, the independence of Ghana would be meaningless unless it was linked with the total liberation of the rest of Africa. He did not only talk the talk, he actually walked that talk by providing the necessary tools so that the African people could in fact walk the walk, which they did in 1994 by South Africa becoming independent and ending apartheid under the leadership of the Madiba, the first indigenous South African president, Nelson Mandela. You know, I often wonder, South Africa is regarded by many as the beacon of hope for African democracy. Could it be that perhaps South Africa in fact has a responsibility to help democratize the rest of Africa?
I would be very skeptical of any efforts to kind of to enjoin South Africa in a continental project, because there are many factors that that I play here that that would determine the outcome of such an intervention. Some of these factors are, for example, are the countries whom South Africa would like to help with democracy, are they Francophone or Anglophone, right? Because this will determine certain interests that might actually, or certain spheres of existence that might not be, that might be disrupted by South Africa trying this project. And another question I would ask is South Africa up to the task? And I'm sorry, Shaka, to disappoint, but I would say no, because South Africa has its own problems at home. Number one, in South Africa, an opposition has not won over 22%. So that means, that's why I call South Africa a nascent democracy. That means any opposition that has ever existed has a vote ceiling of 22%. And that is not bad if you're thinking of it that, well, it's democracy and the people voted. But that is bad if you're thinking about the fact that, well, if you know you have you've cornered the vote, are you going to deliver on many of your promises, especially developmental ones, when you know, look, the ANC will win again and again? So that means we must, for South Africa, we must rely on the ANC democratic processes themselves within the ANC, knowing that whoever the ANC puts most likely wins the election, at least for the foreseeable future. And on that score, I would say the ANC is found wanting, because right now it's undergoing a war of attrition between the factions that won from on which Ramaphosa ascended to power. So South Africa, I would say, is very busy with its own problems to be doing much proselytizing of democracy on the continent, however desirable that is even to me.
But South Africa dominates, or at least at least attempts to dominate Africa when it comes to business.
Indeed.
If it can in fact dominate Africa in terms of business, you go across the African continent and see a lot of these large shopping malls from Southern Africa through Eastern Africa to West Africa. I have been through South African shopping malls. If it can do that, really, why can't it also provide what is even more important, the foundation, which is a political infrastructure of democracy, as opposed to simply looking at the superstructures?
Yes, sir.
In fact, you can also look at MTN, the telecommunications company. It has become continental.
I would say that there are various reasons for this, but essentially, let me deal with two. One, there is a historical reason for South Africa's reticence. South Africa is still a teenager amongst the free nations of Africa as far as time. So the South Africans are quite sensitive to this aspect of their existence within the continent. So they're always stepping with the light foot, because any country can always remind South Africa that, look, like Zimbabwe just did 4 months ago when South Africa sought to be kind of more assertive regarding migration from Zimbabwe. And the Zimbabweans told South Africans in no uncertain terms that Zimbabwe is not a province of South Africa. And South Africa had no answer to that. So South Africa is very sensitive to us being perceived as a neo-colonialist, because also of the problems that used to come from South Africa during apartheid times. So it's very easy then to tell South Africans, for any country that's misbehaving, look, don't come here with that apartheid mentality, and the South Africans will shirk that responsibility. Another reason, of course, is that South Africa is it has developmental problems of its own, and so the business being ahead actually helps South Africa's budget back home than any democratic project. And a third and final reason would be, it's not South Africa looks at these high expectations of it as not fair, because you also, when you're traveling around Africa, Dr. Shaga, see a lot of Chinese companies. The South Africans would say, you why we don't should we ask the Chinese to help us also politically? So it's just business and there's politics. This is why I come back to the point that Africans must find endogenous ways to assess and improve their own democracy.
You mean indigenous ways?
Indeed, Dr. Shaga, a good country on this is Malaysia. Malaysia found out early on that if you have these elected leaders who come and pander after every 5 years and then go away after the promises, there's a certain instability associated with this. But also they were in a dilemma because they said, well, we still want democracy. So how do we merge these? Malaysia was brave and prescient. They have over 5 sultanates in Malaysia. In other words, what in Africa we call traditional leaders. So there's a council that sits of these traditional leaders, and it's not beholden to the government. So they actually certify the election of a prime minister. So if you run for an election in Malaysia, you still have to go to the king, and the king changes between the sultanates every 10 years. I stand for correction. But the point here is that you no longer need outside observers because you have people who have much more to lose guarding the elections, and they're not beholden to the electoral winds that blow every 5 or 6 years.
Interesting. Earlier, Norman, Dr. Puokule raised the issue of what he characterized as the Francophone, the Anglophone. He might, in fact, have added the Lusophone or Lusophonic, essentially those that were under the Portuguese. But what about his emphasis on the indigenous? What about, for example, promoting the issue of the Bantu, who basically have traced their origins in the Cameroon and crisscrossed the continent up to, in fact, Southern Africa? What about Africa uniting along the Bantuphone, or rather, in fact, as someday I was having an interview with Ugandan President General Yoweri Museveni Tibuhaburwa, and he mentioned what he characterized as Africophone. Why not that?
Philosophically, that is a very good idea. It's an ideal, it's an ideal state of mind. For example, if you see the European Union, they have also done their union based on their culture and the way they would want development and all that kind of stuff. When you look at the African
country, but of
course,
experiencing some political hiccups, hence Brexit.
Exactly, mm-hmm. And that is what I was trying to, the Bantuphone for countries that relate or have history with Bantu would have been a very ideal club for the president to sit and take tea. I will give you an example. In East Africa, we are struggling with the East African community. But one of the key issues that arise is that, one, you have a country which has the so-called democratic elections, Kenya. Every 5 years, they change presidency. Mm-hmm. We are not sure. I wouldn't want to comment on the process in this East African community that we are facing today, where we have, for example, Kenya, they change leaders or they go for elections.
They
They have term limits every after five. They say every 5 years, but normally the incumbent holds on to the next term. Same is with Tanzania under CCM, and Rwanda recently has gone to 7 years. And then you have Uganda, which is which has a president who has been in power for 34 years. So, what are these people really going to talk about? When first of all, they have difference in ideology. We have one who believes he's the patron of all of these other leaders. He has a historical attachment to each and every leader, save Tanzania, of course, who have taken office in many of these East African countries, you know? So for me, in Africa or in East Africa for now, I would think having corporations, we still have to deal with our internal politics, so that we are closely at a semblance of levels, so that we can be able to debate issues sensibly. Mm-hmm. Because if we are going to talk about a development issue, mm-hmm. and you're having a constitutional default in your back home,
yeah.
and the other one is having another yeah. issue of a would-be situation that's not in favor with the corporation, then that kills that entire, you know, coming together. That kills the club of tea takers as presidents. Yeah. You've seen Brexit is not any different. You know, many times they would have broken up long time ago because there was an imbalance in the economic existence between these countries, as well as policies, immigration, among others. So the Bantuphone, good idea, ideal situation, but not acceptable at this time.
Yeah, if I may, Dr. Shaga, may
yes,
I?
Please. Yes, please.
It goes back to the point I made earlier that the African leaders have found out, they know the narrative, they know the talking points, and they know how to perform the rituals. And some of these rituals involve a certain gospel. And this gospel usually is Pan-Africanism, anti-colonialism, anti-neo-colonialism. And we know quite well that, for example, in Zimbabwe, one of the lauded as a supreme Pan-Africanist was ex-president Robert Mugabe the late, actually presided over a kleptocracy for decades that took everything from the country, sent it outside, banks and the children of MPs having fancy houses in South Africa. But he was speaking the gospel on YouTube. He's a star, lots of subscribers on all his speeches. But the Pan-Africanism in effect and what he was supposed to bring, we know they don't occur in Zimbabwe, or we don't find the effect. So I agree with Norman on taking a dim view on uber Pan-Africanism that behind which is actually kleptocracy and lack of accountability within the country. So African leaders, they know how to talk Pan-Africanism. And so that is why whenever we quote Kwame Nkrumah and we quote all the speeches from our very bright past, but we know that Pan-Africanism must still pass through the eye of the needle. And that eye of the needle is the country, the nation state, and whether or not the leaders in the nation state are accountable. And so far, if we are to judge Pan-Africanism and its prospects by how, for example, Zimbabwe turned out to be in the last 5 years, we would be very careful jumping on it without knowing the details.
Are we talking about a good message needing a good messenger?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Indeed. And I think I'm a practical person, and in my maybe it's me studying political economics, but what does it have to do with food on the table, peace in the land, stability in the country? And so if you're going to just be the disciple of Pan-Africanism, but in your country people are starving because you took the budget from the Ministry of Health and half of it, and you externalized it to be used by you and your cronies, then I don't want to hear about your Pan-Africanism, no matter how good it sounds.
That makes the case, you know, autocrats obviously like a situation where they are in control of the state,
yes.
especially given that the state in those particular contexts is the single largest employer and is the single largest contractor.
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Shaka.
Conversation. You're most welcome. Mm-hmm. On that note, our distinguished guests are Puokule Munyandu and Norman Mbabazi. Thanks to our audience for tuning in to Straight Talk Africa. Get better, not bitter. And please, please remember to keep the African hopes alive.